Anthony from Langhorne.
Yeah.
Let's just get set up here real quick. I am Anthony from Langhorne. However, I was born in South Korea, Seoul. I was adopted, and this is my family. I have white parents, Caucasian parents. My older brother, right here, he's 5 years older than me, and currently works at a burlesque in Delaware. My younger brother, James, he's only 6 months younger than me, and he got a job at the NHL, which is amazing. He travels up to New York 3 times a week. And me, the fat, spoiled kid, you know, this was at a cruise around maybe 12 years old, I'm not sure. But, yeah, we were well-traveled growing up. I wouldn't say upper middle, but we were a little in a bubble growing up. And just, I was sheltered, I guess. And I didn't understand, like, I'd make fun of people living in trailer parks, and, which is not cool at all. But I've been around and, you know, been to the bottom. At one point in my life, I was sleeping on concrete, so I was hitting rock bottom. And this is me as a baby, Seoul, Korea. I knew I was different. I just didn't understand why or how, because my parents never wanted me to learn the language. And I have two cousins also that are adopted too in Korea. So, I always thought, you know, I am different. People would always stop us, oh, your babies are so cute, and this is me, the toddler. You know, I don't know. I mean, I asked my mom for these pictures, and I haven't seen them in decades. So, yeah, growing up, adopted, I do want to go back to South Korea, Seoul, Korea, and, because they have a dual citizenship for Korean adoptees, which is, you know, I always thought, like, if I found it, I'm leaving and just going. But I don't know the language. My brother doesn't know the language. And it's funny, my uncle owns a Taekwondo shop right on Southampton Boulevard, Binger Lane Taekwondo. And none of us took Taekwondo. So, seriously. But, I mean, I always say, like, as a man, we should get in at least one physical fight each year, and just to, and you have to. I mean, I lose all the time. I do. So, being a baby, I lived at my house in Langhorne. So, I was from South Korea. I was 18 months living in Langhorne. My parents in the 80s. There was a new development, and I love Lower Bucks. It's just developments, and it's different up here. There's no public transportation. Like, the housing is so different. Maybe I haven't seen, like, you know, the developments here, but it's different. It's, you know, where I'm at, it's really sheltered. You know, I'm safe. I mean, you know, I don't, at the Village of Hope with a few people here, you know. And, yeah, it's just, it's totally different, but I'm glad to have my sobriety here. And it would be 2 years coming on the 21st, so... it's not much time, but, you know, I'll get to that. And so growing up, I was a spoiled fat kid. I didn't understand. We got pretty much everything we wanted, and, you know, just, it was nice, and I knew I was an addict because as a child, like, our house was messy, you know, my parents were like, you know, had 3 boys just running around causing havoc, and I would clean up. I would drink a lot of. They always had freeze-dried coffee, and young, I would just take it and just clean up. And you know, it was. I had obsessions, toys and collecting video games, and it was just, you know, nice. And the thing is, when I grew up, I had a lot of friends. A lot of friends that were boys. I never had that many friends that were girls until middle school. So, I mean, it was good. I mean, growing up playing hockey, sports, and everything like that, like the parents put us into. But, you know, as I was growing up, I thought I was different. You know, I thought I was maybe even autistic at some point because I wouldn't get these clues. Like, I don't know if it was my maturity level or it was just, you know, me not being, you know, self-aware. I was just no self-awareness of how I was and just the way I acted. And, yeah, so growing up, I lower box and went to Pearl Buck and went to Maple Point Middle School, if anybody's familiar with that. And, you know, things were good. You know, I wasn't a drug addict. I remember walking home one day, these girls were like, "Do you have a can?" I'm like, "A can for what?" You know, they were smoking marijuana. Yeah. I didn't know. I was just naive. I'm like, okay. Until, like, long later, I'm like, that's why you need the can. So, yeah. So things didn't really change until high school. Because Neshama goes up to 9th grade, and then Neshama High School goes 10th, 11th, and 12th. This is where I started my journey, my experiences with everything and alcohol. Because this is me, my high school, 11th grade. It changed from 10th grade to 11th grade. You know, just I had two alcohol poisonings before I graduated, so I was in the programs really early. At St. Mary's, they were like, you had a 3.31 alcohol content, and you had the highest THC level we've ever seen. So, and I will always remember that, you know. My parents were scared because not only were the cops called, that I was just blacked out, fighting, losing it, and it was scary. It was scary for them, my family, my brother, and yeah, and it just didn't stop from there. I mean, if they just say alcohol is a gateway drug, but it is horrible. I mean, this is when I knew I had a problem. I was taking shots of Absolut vodka just to go to school. And in 11th grade, I was just declining. Like, people would be like, "You're smart, right?" I'm like, "What? Why? Why do you assume that? Because I'm Asian?" You know? Seriously, I'm like probably the only Asian in that, like, high school that never graduated. I did get my GED though, and I started some college, but it was bad. You know, I just didn't want to go to school. I was just burnout. I was wanted to try everything, and high school's everything, you know, under the sun. And it was just like, I like this, and it continued to. And so in high school, they did co-op, which is you go to school for half the day, then you work, and then every opportunity I had in high school, I just ruined. I mean, they were like, "All right, well, you can just redo the grade." I'm like, no, this is 2001. The World Trade Center was hit, so all my friends, if they weren't doing, they're going to the military. And so I wanted to too. I wanted to go to the Navy. And the next day, I think we went to prom, and I smoked before talked to my recruiter, and he's driving up Route 1, and I'm like, "Look, I was going to go to MEPS the next day, and it's a military placement, and I told him I smoked, and he stopped the car right on Route 1 to get the book out. So I'm like, "Oh, geez, like, just this opportunity now, too." It's like, so I tried the Marines, and my friend Joe here, and Joe went, and I couldn't do the running. I was not in shape, and I didn't know why. I was, you know, just trying, my parents wanted me to, and like getting myself straight, you know, because I'm failing school. I'm just not doing well. I'm, you know, holding on to like any job I could and just, you know, spending all my money on that. And so tried the Army too. And I mean, I grew with ASVABs. My GED scores were good. My ASVABs were great. Those are the military testing, and I didn't do any of them. I ended up working security for Target at 18, and that was a job that I'll never forget because I never had any retail thefts. I mean, they showed me everything. It was like personal self-defense training. It was, you know, just like a lot of dummy cameras. If you see those black cameras in any department store, like it's the domes, they're false ones, and there's... Like, I got myself in trouble there because I had my friend delivering stuff to me inside Target working as a security guard. So that didn't end up too well, and I just thought that from there on, it's like, I have a problem. I have a problem because by 20, I had my first DUI, and it was because of alcohol, and we hired a lawyer, and they have bare minimum, so the lawyers can't really do anything, you know, spending like $10,000, and my parents didn't know what to do. I thought like, oh, my world's ending, you know, I'm just not functioning, and this is like 2003, you know, I tried college, and you know, I'm doing presentations about Tor in 2003 and like being anonymous, and that didn't end up anywhere because it just, I kept using. I did not know how to stop, and but I knew I had a problem because I was through, you know, going through these meetings, and you know, I thought it was a cult. You know, it's like I'm too young. Like I don't know anything. Sure, I should have got a sponsor, but I was just doing it, you know, so I can get past probation and then start using it. And I would count down, like, all right, here we go, and then let's light up, you know. So through that time, you know, my parents, you know, I wouldn't say they were enablers, but they were. I was very codependent, and, you know, it's just from 18, like 2003, 2005, I got my second DUI. And I hired the same lawyer again and couldn't do anything. Minimum mandatory, 90 days in jail, you know. I went to rehab so I got some time served and then spent 60 days on house arrest. And it was stupid. They would call and be like, and you have to repeat what they say. A penny a day is a penny a pound. You know, record your boy, yeah. And I did. I mean, I was like, I tried college again in 2008, so I'm like 23. I'm working at Friendly's as a dishwasher, and it's just like, you know, my parents didn't care. I mean, I love my parents. I love them to death, and it's just, I was the bird not flying out of the coop. My brother, you know, he's doing good. Both my brothers are, and I'm just going downhill fast, and there's no brakes. And so, it's around 2008, I, you know, went back to college. Did an academic restart at Bucks County Community College, and again, I couldn't do it. I just didn't. Suddenly there was a fog that I couldn't get through, you know. And during that time, I had to do like driver safety lessons for the DUI and meetings, you know. So I'm just like going there, not, you know, wanting to do it. I didn't. I knew of AA, but, and I knew I had a problem. So step one was there, and just to get a sponsor. I said, you know, it's, I've had all crappy sponsors. I don't know. Maybe it's just me not doing the work into it, but you know, if you do it and get that support group, yeah, sure, it works. And you know, hopefully, you know, today I can show you it does. And so around 2008, 2010 was, you know, and these are alcohol DUIs, so I had a breathalyzer in my car, and this is the time my grandmother had cancer, and she had pills on pills, like, in this house, and she was going through it a bit bad, and me being a POS, you know, take her perk fives, and I just didn't understand the progression, and I'm so glad I never did anything that hard until I was older, and, you know, just the drinking, and trying to mix these, like, you know, with alcohol to see what was great. Like, you ever try this, huh? You ever do this? And I'm like, no, well, you will. So, and, you know, still had a good friend network, you know? We just, not went to college, but a lot went to the military, a lot served, and, you know, just pushing people away. That's all I am. And then it's dwindling from, like, you know, high school. Just that dynamic shift of, you know, I fit through with anybody, but it was a depressing time. It was very depressing. And, you know, I would doctor shop, like, for ADHD pills, like, because my friends are like, look, all you gotta do is, you know, when a letter pops up, keep pressing the letter, and they would. So it's just a horrible, horrible thing, you know? And I don't believe that at that time I was even able to live. I don't understand why I couldn't, you know, phone or leave, you know. So this is like 2008, 2010. I had a possession charge. I was driving in my car with the breathalyzer, and I'm like, look, I'll take it, you know. You just go home, you know, and I spent like 12 hours in the roundhouse. I felt like every time I got in trouble, it was a slap on my wrist. Even the DOIs. Just, you know, because I passed the probation. As soon as that probation, I'm counting down. All right, here we go. And, you know, I had people there like, hey, let's get high. Let's drink. And, you know, it's like something to celebrate, you know. Just get stuck into it. So I was working at H.H. Gregg, which I sold appliances. I was horrible at that. Horrible. I was always in draw. Commissions. It was just like, I'd go up to them trying to hard sell, and they're like, can I talk to her? I'm like, yeah, sure. Because I had no idea what I was talking about. So it was horrible. So, 2010, you know, that place shut down, and I'm starting to get more addicted to these Percocets. And I went up with the you know, before they did the anti-abuse, M-boxes, the 80s, and finally heroin. So, and my parents, that again, they didn't understand this. They didn't understand, you know, and I'm just still living with them, you know, having people come and go, and, you know, I didn't care. I mean, I met somebody at that time who's 13 years older than me, and, during this time, I was such a prude. I knew she was losing everything. She had a trailer park. You know, it was funny. I was talking about trailer. She lived in a trailer park. Yeah, that's where I ended. And seriously, she has a salon. She used to work at Innovations, and she used to dance. And she was my like first love. And this is like late in my time, you know, because I didn't know what love was, and it was obsessive. It was obsessive, it was codependent, and it was, you know, we loved each other, we primarily did, and 2010 to 2005, I was just ripping, running, you know, when there was, like, real heroin at the time, because you'd go down to Delaware, and it would be, like, Pakistan, Osama bin Laden on the stamps. Seriously, it was, you know, this journey that I'm going on, too, and the only thing I could ever get from that experience was just vivid awake dreams, and I'd like to take the positive out of all that, but it was hell, you know, just like alcohol, you know, you withdraw, and it is, I'd say even the worst hangover would be torture, you know. But then again, I found my hangover cure, which was opiates, and it cleared, it was a cure, and I rarely say that, just don't do it, because it's dangerous, along with alcohol and cocaine, it makes coca ethylene. And that can give you a heart attack, and you don't want that. So back then, you know, just around 2010 to 2015, I was just running and going, always going to Kensington. And I only owned 3 cars in my life, in my name. Like prior in high school, my mom, I totaled the Dodge Intrepid, and I was drunk. The cop let me go. I'm like, there was a contractor with a... a landscaper, pulled out right in front of me, smashed the car and hit my knee, and it's just like, I'm like, I'm going to jail again, this is going to be my third DUI, and he knew, so I ruined the Dodge Intrepid. I had a Dodge Neon, got real, but the one car was a 2001 Hyundai Elantra. I had that for 10 years, and I, all my cars had to do with Kensington. I remember I was giving them Christmas gifts on Siambunya, and I was out of gas the next day, like the day after Christmas, and they knew I had stuff in my trunk, and I had to get gas. Me and my fiance, we went to get gas, and the car was smashed up. I was like, what is going on? Like, and she's just running her mouth, and she gets hit, and I get hit, and they're just throwing things. They took this... it was a Pikachu Nintendo 64, still in the box. I mean, worth so much money today. And a lot of, I had a lot of, like, new things, too. I just sold it. It would be it was my nest egg, and I just got rid of it. And so that was that first car, and the way I asked her, since I didn't have a car anymore, we were sitting on a septic bus, and she had her legs across my legs, and I'm like, babe, do you want to marry me? That's what I did, on the septic bus, yeah. So she was living with me in my world. Yeah, I know. Got her ring at Walmart, and it just made her fingers like green. Yeah, horrible, but it's true though. So 2011 was my last charge. This was like, I got pulled over right by Morrisville, and I'm like, just be honest. I'm always honest with cops, and I never extreme thing. I'm not like, I hate all cops, because, you know, I look at them individual, and I deal with that, you know, like, and it's funny because people, like, they either like me or they just don't like me, and there's no in between. And it's hard for me to open up. So, and I get, when I get in these relationships, I'm all in. I'm like that person, like, ew, get, like, stop touching her in front of me, please. Like, which I get now, but it's like how I was. That's how I was, and, you know, being the first love, and just, you know, her being 13 years older than me, it was, you know, she showed me some things, and, you know, I remember us making love, she's like, this is better than shooting dope. I'm like, sure, it is. Horrible. Anyway, out of the 2011 from, I'd say, 2000 to my last arrest prior up to that, I had almost a decade just running and gunning, just, I'd only buy enough that I could swallow, so that's why. And so they were doing a sting at Cambria, seeing Cambria, and I remember I'm walking with it in my hand, get stop and frisk, or observe stop and frisk. So I'm caught red-handed. I'm like, all right, I'm going to jail for this, but they were doing a sting. So I go to court, and and this is when I get public defenders, because I love public defenders after this, you know. I'd always use them because, you know, they're pretty good at what they do. So I get caught with this red-handed, four bags, and I go to the roundhouse, and I'm found guilty, you know, and I try to move my probation over to Bucks County, which I do, and my probation officer is like, Anthony, can I see your room? I'm like, why? So 2015 to 16, I'm still in trouble. I couldn't pass a piss test. You know, even if you gave me $1,000, I wouldn't be able to stay clean at that time. And the funny thing is, like, when he said it, I was like, yeah, I'm honest. I'm honest with him. Like, the last charge was for a gram of weed, and he charged me for that, and I got no further penalty. So I'm feeling like, okay, if I'm honest with him, he'll let me go. We're about to get clean. We're about to go to the clinic. Found Suboxone and Klonopins, and I got two charges on me now. I'm like, all right, now that's just getting real. You know, either I'm flying through everything, but no, no. We appeal the case because they were doing a sting. And this public defender, God bless her soul, she's like, the flesh description, which is what cops do. There's a white male, red cap, gray hoodie. And which it was, and I'm not white. So they dropped that, both charges, and I'm just like, all right, you know, I got this thing. I mean, and just supporting 120 to have it, you know. And I never sold her. If anything, I was a middleman. And if anything, if you wanted to rob, steal, I'd take you there. But I'm not going to get my hands dirty, because that's karma, and in the end, it'll bite you in the ass. So it was like, just, you know, just running and gunning and just stealing. And I haven't had jobs since like 2010, and this is 2015. That's 5 years without working, but I'm telling you, it was a job just maintaining. And again, so I'm like getting older now. I'm 37 years old, and finally able to get this, you know. I'm just, it clicked. And at the time, like 2018, we broke up with my fiance. It destroyed me, and I went on a rebound, just like 2000, but I'm losing it. I'm meeting these people in these wrong places, know, for me, jails, institutions, or death, you know, I hit institutions and I think I'm still alive. So, I, you know, that didn't hit until later on. It just was not in the books. And I never had to go to these meetings and I didn't want to go to the meetings. And that's totally different today, which is a blessing. So I break up with my ex-fiance, and it's just a funny thing. I end up, during COVID, like 2018, I met my first rehab romance, and my second car was a Chevy Prism coming home from Kensington, pop a piston, and that was the end of that car. So, and I don't even know how these girls, like, I mean, I don't have a place, I, you know, I just, maybe, but I did, you know. And I ended up leaving her in Kensington because I was supporting her habit, and she managed to have crack. And I'm like, how'd you get that? And so I left her. I left her there. And I'm such a I would cut you off if you did something like that. And I don't mind it today, you know what I mean? But it's just like the past relationships I've been in, 2018, and up until, like, 2019, I'm still going crazy. I'm going to these institutions, and I met these two lovely ladies. I don't put them out. There's a reason. Lower box, I met M. And, like, when you're in crisis and in those situations, it cuts all the dating. So you're talking with me 24, you know, to all day, every day. And one day out, so I met Emily, and I'm out for one day, went to a meeting that night. I'm like, yeah, babe, yeah, like, I can dig this. I end up relapsing, drinking, and I am drinking, and shooting cocaine might be, and I called 911, and I hung up. So they always call back, so I'm like, oh, what am I doing here? Like, I could see them. We have a bathroom. Once you open the doorway to my parents' house, and there's a bathroom up top, so I'm looking down, and I turn all the lights off because there's more than one cop to check. So my parents are at the end of the street. They close out the street. I kick out the top window, and I'm on the roof, and these guys are like, Anthony, put your hands up. And I had a knife sharpener. They're like, what is that? Put it down. And I get arrested, and they send me to MCDS, wherever. It's called L. So I meet L, and I come out there, and we get a hotel room, and we do that. We could, you know, again, this is just my rebound after that, and just things got bad, because now I'm dating both of them. She would come Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, then on Thursday, Friday. And then my parents, I have no phone, no car, no job. I don't know what it is, but I guess I'm a charming motherfucker or something. So they end up, it was funny, they find out about each other, and she, the one accusing me of a crime, major crime, that the detectives called, which is funny, they called right when I'm in the bed with the other one, and they're like, well, you should come in and talk to us. I'm like, yeah, maybe I should. And, you know, I'm texting her all this time, and now this is no contact. They're like, stop trying to contact her. I'm like, no, why? What are you going to do, like, during this investigation? Like, you need my side. And, you know, she had a recorded call. She's just like, chips me off. She's like, Anthony, do we ever wear condoms? I'm like, babe, what are you doing? So, 2019, February, she ends up dying of an overdose. Swat. And I didn't get to go to her funeral or anything. It was like, and this investigation stopped. Lack of evidence. And I'm like, what am I doing, you know? What is going on here? My parents are like, what is going on here? We have detectives coming, you have people, you're on the roof. What are you doing? And, you know, it was time almost around COVID. So I'm still with, you know, M for a little bit. And I ended up just start doing something I shouldn't have. I started doing math and, like, just crazy. And it was something I never expected, you know. I'd always wanted to see what everything was about, and it destroyed me. It destroyed a lot of things, and it was getting hot, you know, because what they do is, like, if you like, at motels or high traffic drug areas, and you don't see a cop, there's cops there, and these girls don't want to get a soliciting charge of sex crime, so they'll flip them. They'll flip them, do small buys, and they'll keep on going up, you know? So, and it's ruthless. You can't trust nobody. And just, it was about time. My parents, they're like, Anthony, this is time. You are 30-some years old. You never had your own place. I'm putting a PFA on you. So I'm like, I'm homeless now. You know, and if it was, it might have been like a few days I was sleeping with somebody, you know, sleeping in a couch or something. And that was it. I had nothing. My go-to, you know, my support, my family, they cut me off. It was too much. It's too much for them. They're old. My dad is now almost 80 years old, and my mom is 77. And I ended up in Kensington sleeping on concrete for 4 months. And I came back, like, 125 pounds. I was skinny. I looked like, it was horrible. And I got clean. Like, this is like, COVID's coming, so I'm working, living at a recovery house, you know, finally getting it together. But I ended up leaving because I brought shit in the house and they found bags in the toilet, so I'm like homeless in my, you know, still with the active PFA, like 2020, mom's like, you can come back in there. That was the worst idea ever. You know, so. Not only that, I end up going to jail for that. A $200,000 bail. And my last stuck conviction was 2011. They playing no games. So I did 2 months in jail. They sent me to the Penn Foundation after 2 months and I absconded. And I end up going for a little run. After this, I was clean for a little bit in January. So I absconded. I end up going, doing the 6 months prior to that, and go to Kirkbride. And, I'm telling my probation officer, yeah, this is what's happening. Yeah. And I end up getting bricks thrown on my head. I end up overdosing. But even the time homeless, I mean, God does answer prayers, even foxhole prayers. You know, I was like, God, I just need $2, get me through this. And panhandling, you know, it's just, you have to put yourself in there, and it's just, you know, it's to cope. You know, the people would ask me, is this for drugs? Yeah, they'll still give me money. And I still give people who have known drug addicts money just for that, because a little bit helps and they'll find their way. If you want to keep on living on the streets, if you want to keep on selling yourself, you know, so be it. But, you know, that's where I, you know, I'm finally starting to lose it, because I am dual diagnosis. I have schizoaffective and bipolar, and I hear voices, I see things, I hear things, and I'm medicated with that. And it's hard. It's hard to, you know, get that right chemical balance, because otherwise I'll be stuck in my head hearing these voices and not be able to carry on a conversation because of my mental illness. So, and I generally don't talk about it that much because it's real to me. It's real to me, and, you know, it may be some other entity or whatever it is, but this is where, you know, I can get through the steps and, you know, find what it was. Because when I was homeless, I saw Jesus. I saw Jesus, and I said, what can I do for you, Jesus? And that was the first thing I said, and at that time, I was blessed. I felt God and, you know, just everything how it is that He speaks through us. Maybe you're in a monologue, but that's Him. Like, Anthony, don't eat so much. Anthony, you should go to sleep. That's Him talking through us. Because otherwise, if you hear a booming voice, like, come on, what, you know, what is that? You know, so I think not only is He relative to people, He can be Buddha, Allah, He can be Jesus. And I think with Him, which is our conscious contact, you know, because when I pray and meditate, something answers and I listen to myself, like, maybe just, you know, maybe you should stop doing this, you know, he's in all of us. And that's our conscious contact, if I can make sense out of everything. And I tried to live just, I wanted to understand everything, like, because recently it was like these school shooters, like Adam Lanza, or like, why, cause somebody to do that? And it, all the time, it's just like the song said, I heard demons. Like, why is that a constant with these people? You know, why are they hearing these things or believing a dog is talking to them? And yeah, I mean, it's real. Because, you know, with us, I mean, being like that, I can understand how, you know, because not only are they ruthless, they're like, Anthony, you're a piece of shit, Anthony, you know, but it's gotten to the point where this is phenomenal. I could talk to them, and they're like, yeah, we are being, and they stop, which is insane. Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, hey, and that's where together, we come together and have this consciousness that we're all in the same position right here. Either one is, you know, different from the other. And so, I ended up filing the PFA twice. So that took me did the 2 months, and I abscond and I go back in. Again, $250,000 bail, and there's no way, that's 20 grand. I couldn't understand, like, there was no violence. The only thing I have on my records are nonviolent drug offenses, DUIs, possession charges, and criminal, trespassing that were felonies, they were going to be felonies, destruction of property, because I was banging on the door and a little crack happened and I had empty baggies on me. So I did 10 months and this is where I got my spiritual awakening during COVID. I was locked in a cell for months at a time by myself, and something came to me, and praying for that, and I went through the whole gambit. So 2019 to 2020, just going to the RHU, which is the restricted housing unit, the MHU, the medical housing unit, and opened my eyes to Muslims. If you ever see, usually they're African men with like dark spots, a prostration mark, because they pray all the time, it's a fixed schedule, and just to have somebody, you know, help me get through my fifth step was, you know, they're like, hey, you know what, my cellie, let's call him G, like Muslim all the way, and, you know, wants me to kneel on IP. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. So he respects that. But he just got done doing 5 years, and he's like, he was out 1 month, he ends up selling marijuana to this 14-year-old in exchange for pictures. So I'm like, dude, you are never getting out. And he's like, I know. And, you know, to have him able to tell me that, what is not only a blessing, but it's kind of scary that he trusted me with that. Because I remember in this cell with him, and this is divine intervention, I was like, he's like, I'm afraid of women. I'm like, you're afraid of women? Maybe you don't like women. So he would wrestle with me every now and then. But this left, he would! It was crazy. And then he kept like pushing my head down to his crotch area. I'm like, what are you? And I didn't understand it. So he bashes my head against the cell and flushes the toilet. And by divine intervention, there's a CO, and the toilet never stopped flushing. It got me out. Yeah. So there was, it's funny, there was another guy there, Ghost, so they put me in a cell with him, and he has a corner cell, so they put, like, either toilet paper or, you know, like, a screen, a curtain, so when you walk in, or, you know, you see your cellie, he would go to the bathroom naked, I'd just be a count, open the door, and just like, oh, man, sorry, bro, and that happened 3 times, and then the last time, he's like, stay out of here. I'm like, I'm getting fucked up, right? Which, the heel of the door grabs and throws me into the back of the cell, and by divine intervention, CEO comes during the count, and I'm like screaming, help! Help! And, you know, and that's where, you know, I feel that he's there, and not only with the foxhole prayers, and, you know, just being in all of us. If you want to ignore it, he will. Just, you know, see demons. Have some bad stuff happen to you. Be miserable while you're sober when it should be a blessing, you know? So, I end up doing 10 months, finishing it out, and acting it out, and they had to take me to Building 50 that I was so out of my mind that in jail they had to put me into there. And I remember this other Muslim guy, he's like, telling me, yeah, I shot him and in his stomach, and he made too much noise, so I shot him in the head. And it's just like, why can't I get over my hurdles when they're not even that bad, you know? So I tend to, you know, allow those steps. And when you go through those steps, and once you hit something that's beyond beautiful, like just being able to, you know, do a 180 in your life, and it's just been 2 years, but not only do I have my family back, not only can I go to Christmas with them, but it's been years, and I'm lucid, and I feel like if it wasn't because of the PFA, if it wasn't for that, you know, it's fine. Because now I look at it, like, I'm 37 years old, I have no kids, I've never had credit, I've never had my, and just like, I can do those things sober, I can find it sober. And that's, you know, if I were to go back to it, my mom and dad would be devastated. And I don't want that, and I'm not doing it for them. Because I, you know, what I get here, and I do at least 3 meetings a week, if not more, now that I work, and I am a dishwasher, but, you know, it is what it is. I enjoy it. It's so stupid. And I get in these stupid arguments, like, with people. It's just recently with this one girl, Kylie, there, just like, you know, I didn't know how old she was. I'm like, Kylie, you're pretty. And she's like, okay, smiled. And then I'm like, so how are you making out tonight? She loses it. She's like, you could be old enough to be my dad. I'm like, I didn't even know how old you were at once. And I'm sorry that I said that. But it just made a division from the serving staff. They all hate me because then her mother's like, you're an ugly piece of crap. And I'm like, say that to my face, you know? Because they were all, like, all of them were like, I'm like, the RS Keystone is where waitresses come to die. Why are you looking at seriously, go there. I'm like, geez, you know, horrible. But, yeah, just, you know, finally having my parents back, you know, working, it's a blessing. And I do feel like I was spiritually awoken, and, you know, not only through, you know, where I am, the Village of Hope, and having another year to go, it's okay, because where else am I going to go? Like, I'm not allowed to go to my parents' house, you know, at all. So, not only is this a learning experience for me, being sober, but I have a non-violent drug offense. I have a future, and this is what AA can give me, you know, it can give all of you, you know, just meditate and pray. He'll answer those prayers, even simple things. And what I do, patience, God give me patience, God give me tolerance, God give me understanding and acceptance, you know, because he, whatever way he works, and it will find you peace, that the way I can now look at myself in the mirror and be like, you are one goofy motherfucker, and I smile, and I love it, it's just, and you know, my voice is a little bit too, and it's just like, they do, just laughing. But, yeah, when I was coming out of jail, Emily, the last thing I told her was, look, I love you. And she said, I love you too. And that's the last thing she said. And Leslie, before she died of an overdose, I was like, hey, look, I love you. God is with them. And those things, those opportunities that I was at Wawa, Cricket, I ran into my ex-fiance, just like, babe, you know, to have those and make those amends, to say, look, I love you. She's like, I gave her my number, but that's it. Like, just with these past relationships that I've had, we're just, you know, I can close that chapter that we're okay, you know? Not only can I grieve now that I couldn't because she died while I was in jail, but be okay with it, you know? Because I had two cats, two lovely cats, Gigi and Cole. And while I was on the PFA, my mom put down Gigi, she was old. I got it in, like, 2005. Nicole, the awesome cat. This dude, cat, would run up to you and be like, meow. I'm like, good job, buddy. Come on now. He always gives us mice and stuff. But he was put in a no-kill shelter in Benson. And it's just like, I am getting this raw deal that I'm not getting these closings, but with my ex-fiance, you know, she's like 50-some years old now, and, you know, a few of my friends seen her, you know, just like, gave her a kiss and just said, I love you, and if this is the last thing I say, you know, and if you let God, God will let you do it, just to make amends. It's soul cleansing, it is, you know, the way you can change your life, you know. Just don't harbor that. Like, everybody's had, like, when we drink, okay, we do some stupid things. And then the next day we're like, why did I do that? You know, and it's intrusive. It's just like, oh, you get so depressed by that. But today, you know, with my prayer and meditation, I can lay down. I don't have shame, guilt, regret, fear. It's like, you know, my voice is like, remember when you farted in third grade and everybody laughed at you? Yeah, I did. And that's that. That's it. You know, I'm not going to be mortified or petrified of the things that I've done, but it's a blessing that the God of my understanding is here and that it's real, you know, that I know that the people that have passed that I couldn't pass, that they're okay and there is something real out there. So that's the beauty of it. I mean, there is a heaven and there is a hell, and this third reality dimension that we're in, you know, if he's in us, if he's omnipotent and omnipresent, you know, I think just knowing that, we want to change the way you are, you know, because he gives you these opportunities. I know he's given me an opportunity of a lifetime to be up here today and be able to share my experience with you and be okay with it and to tell you that every day is a blessing. Where I'm at, I'm sure I'm gonna come out of this program with an apartment, with living my own, and finally being able to ruin my credit. Finally to meet somebody, you know, that I, you know, I could share my life with. Because I'm 37. I may not look, but I feel it every day. Right, especially working at the Keystone, the RNS Keystone. And it's a jungle in there. But just, you know, and it's a funny thing about, like, being Asian, I guess. Like, not only am I the only one in meetings and anything, so I don't have that, like, common, like, you know? which is funny, because the driver, like, I went out, I guess we were coming, I didn't go to a meeting on Tuesday, so I go out to this Kabuchi Hibachi place. Don't ever go there. Do not ever go there. I got beef and broccoli, right? And they didn't charge me. So on December 22nd, like 2nd, it was a Friday, I get a charge for $94.94. I'm like, oh my God, the only Asian people I run into, you charge my card $94? That's insane. Like, and so I had to call them up, and, you know, I got... I didn't have a receipt, so I'm like, oh, I'm going to bite this in the ass, am I? So, no, I didn't. I did not. So, you know, that's good. And along with the fifth step being a hurdle and having a sponsor, and this is where I hit my 13th step, was I was vulnerable, and this girl was stalking me. She would just pop up, you know, but I liked her for who she was, and she wasn't a sponsor at all, and I could tell you what they tell you, don't ever have a sponsor that's the opposite sex, because not only did I feel I was taken advantage of during early in my early recovery, that I really haven't had a sponsor, that she took me, and she wanted something that I couldn't give back, and to this day, like, she wanted kids, you know, I got her apartment key, she's like, when you're on level 3, we'll just move in together, and I'm like, no, I don't want to, I'm okay, because the way she was, and it's just like, I wasn't there with her, you know, so, yeah, don't do that, because it will, it's just bad, and now we don't talk, and that's the only relationship, now I have to make amends to her, which, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I don't know. And some of you may know her. It's just something that I have to deal with, and you know, I don't have, I've never been had sober relationships, so it's just new to me, and I feel as I'm backing the wall, you know, like, because every day I you know, at where I am, it's just gives me the ability to work on myself and to hopefully, you know, send a message that it's possible and God is real. God is real. And there are things that we may not be susceptible to or we may tangibly hold on to, but, you know, if you can just look at yourself and, you know, praise Him, He'll give the favor back in one way or another, you know. So, I don't know how much time.
You're good.
I'm good. Right. So, I mean, this is pretty much all I got, and, you know, thanks for letting me share.